So I'll introduce myself. Good afternoon. I'm a retired professor of physics with a PhD from Cornell. And I also have a master's degree in systematic theology from Union Theological Seminary in New York City. Currently, most of my work centers on putting Christianity and science in dialogue around environmental issues. But today I'd like to do something, well, shall we say, different. My title is Being a Scientist and a Christian Lessons from Religious Dual Belonging. Comes from some of my experiences with some people in seminary and from some conversations in interreligious dialogue and dual belonging. So to be a full member of the ASA requires at least an undergraduate degree in a science broadly determined, as well as an affirmation of either the Apostles or Nicene Creed. So our identities are grounded in two communities, the Christian community and the scientific community, what I'm calling a dual belonging. It is not unusual for articles in ASA publication to address issues involving science and Christianity. And for many of us, this internal dialogue reflects an internal dialogue. And this talk is not about the external dialogue per se, but about the nature of the internal dialogue. So I use the term dual belonging as it refers to an individual who's living in two communities, with a real commitment to both communities and with dealing with the conflicts that arise. And this struggling with the conflicts is important. The quest for truth is characteristic of both science and Christianity, and there's an overlap sometimes. And so the incompatible nature sometimes generates internal struggles, and I would like to talk about that internal struggle by drawing on the experience of those with dual religious belonging. So I'll be drawing on the experiences of Paul Nitter, who was one of my professors, who was a Buddhist and a Christian, and considers himself and practices in both religions. I'll be also drawing on the work of Catherine Cornillo. She's a professor of comparative theology who has written extensively on interreligious dialogue and, I'll say, really doubts whether dual belonging is possible. And some of the work is drawn from John Thadamalal, my advisor in seminary, whose course in Hindu-Christian dialogue back in 2013 started thinking along these lines and saying, gee, is some of this stuff relevant to science and religion as well? So in this paper, I'll point out, I'm not considering science as religion, which makes it a little easier, but rather as sort of a search for ultimate reality or truth. One characteristic of science is the attempt to hold all such understandings provisionally. But religion holds things sometimes absolutely. There's some things we hold absolutely. And so there's inevitability that some truth claims will collide. And I'm hoping that, hopefully we'll see that the conversation with people with dual belonging in religious dialogue will shed some light on some of the things we might be going through. So I'm going to start first talking about what dual belonging isn't, if you wish, a via negativity. Then I'll talk a little bit about what dual belonging is, and I'll talk about both Nitter's and Cornille's attitudes, and then I'll close off by talking about sort of handling the internal dialogue. So what dual belonging isn't? It's not enculturation. So let me give Cornille's enculturation as, quote, the attempt to reformulate one religious tradition through the worldview and philosophical framework of another, unquote. Within a Christian religious dialogue, this can admit to two forms: reformulating science through a Christian framework, or reframing Christianity through a scientific framework. So examples of viewing science through a Christian worldview include attempts to critique evolution, geology, physics, psychology using the Bible. And often the conflicts are handled either by reformulating the science or rejecting the science altogether. And this sort of amounts to an apologetics for religion in the face of a perceived threat. Viewing Christianity through the lens of science can take the form of biblical accommodation or symbolic interpretations of troublesome biblical passages. It might be the interpretation, for instance, of the law against eating pork as a way of avoiding trichinosis, results in a divine commandment being viewed as practical advice. In both of these cases, there's a prior commitment to either Christianity or science as dominant, and the other is reinterpreted in an attempt to harmonize the two. The person involved with enculturation has a home, either science or Christianity, visits the other, taking and interpreting what they may, and then returning home. Those with dual belonging view both science and Christianity as their home. So dual belonging isn't syncretism. So syncretism selects parts of our scientific understanding, rejects other parts. It selects parts of Christianity and rejects other parts. Careful selection of what you accept and reject allows for a harmonization of the two. But often the parts that are selected and combined, that is neither scientific nor Christian. So I'll pull one example from seminary. There's a branch of process called process theology that's closely tied to the work of philosopher Alfred North Whitehead. And one example of something that they use that's not supported by science is the assumption that the smallest elementary particle has a degree of self-causation, if you wish, some sort of sentience. Something unacceptable to orthodox theology is that the process God is not omnipotent. So as a result, they have something that's neither orthodox science nor orthodox Christianity. So as Christians, we are not free to pick and choose what elements of Christianity we like or which ones we don't. As scientists, we're not free to pick and choose among the scientific evidence, the procedures, the results that we would like to, and those that we'd like to ignore. Taking those elements from Christianity and science and harmonize and leaving the rest on the trash heap may lead to harmonization, but at risk being neither Christian nor science. Thomas Merton expressed this idea in a religious context, quote, "There can be no question of a facile syncretism, a mishmash of semi-religious verbiage and pieties, a devotionalism that admits everything and therefore takes nothing with full seriousness," unquote. So, dual belonging isn't holding that all truth is socially or individually determined. So this is another approach that truth is something that's social or personal constructions. Some of the New Age outlooks reject all truth claims that do not correspond to one's personal opinion or experience. Once this path is chosen, one is free to accept or reject any truth claim is no longer relevant to the modern world. This approach also allows one to create new social truths that might be useful today, but discarded tomorrow. This approach in science was influenced by the publication of Thomas Kuhn, The Structure of Scientific Revolutions, in 1962. And the humanities often view this as a definitive work in which science becomes simply a human construct. And in this view, science has no unique claims to truth. The rejection of truth claims in religion results in religion being reduced to sociology, psychology, and cultural adaptation. Truth becomes opinion. Some opinions may be more socially acceptable than others, but truth ultimately becomes opinion. It'd be obvious that the extreme versions of this are neither acceptable to science or religion. So if we were to have one foot firmly planted in Christianity, other firmly planted in science, there will be differences. It is a science's natural inclination to want to harmonize all knowledge. But if we're going to be committed to both the scientific community and the Christian community, this temptation may need to be resisted. There are differences, and dual belonging lives with the tension. Okay, what dual belonging is. So I'm going to talk a little bit about Nitter. In one of his papers, talks about, has four guidelines for the dual belonging, and Corneal develops five attitudes for interreligious dialogue. And so I'd like to talk a little bit about those as indicative. Okay. So this is from Nitter's paper, World Without Walls Equal Multiple Belonging. Dual belonging as a pluralistic starting point. This assumes that neither Christianity nor science has total and complete access to a description of the truth. A belief that the search for meaning and understanding is richer and more complete in the combination of science and religion than with either singly. Dual belonging is an identity. Nitter talks about functioning in the borderlands between two religions, in this case, Buddhism and Christianity. I do not feel that way. I think a scientist who is Christian can claim to function fully in both worlds, to be fully Christian and fully scientist. I do not shed my science when in church, and I'm no less a Christian when I'm doing scientific work. Dual belonging involves two practices and two communities. To avoid this enculturation, viewing something from a different point of view, someone who is dual belonging needs to be a full member of both communities, the scientific community and the Christian community, dual citizens, as it were. This puts a dual belonger in a sort of a unique position between the two communities, but this is only true so long as the temptations to enculturation and syncretism are avoided. Dual belonging searches for functional analogies. There are areas where science and Christianity make claims on the same topic. These are the ones that are intensely debated, you know, evolution, creationism, miracles, etc. The person with dual belonging must bring both science and Christianity to bear on these issues, jointly, in dialogue. I'm going to quote something from Nitter, and he's talking about dual religion, but I think it's relevant. To quote, we need to identify, quote, metaphors, symbols, practices, and teaching within each tradition that appear to have the same function, the same intent of purpose, or that we're trying to answer similar questions, unquote. When these commonalities are understood, then we can explore the similarities and differences, and the differences may be as important as the similarities. So I'll be turning to Corneille, who actually sort of doubts whether true dual belonging is possible. And her reason is that there's always going to be conflicting truth claims. And so, quote, a real struggle and a source of suffering and confusion in her mind, unquote, is what's going to result. So these are drawn from her book called The I Am Possibility of Interreligious Dialogue. She has written extensively on the subject. And she lists in this five attitudes that are necessary for successful interreligious dialogue. Humility, commitment, interconnection, empathy, and hospitality. So, doctrine of epistemic humility. It's like Nitter has a pluralistic starting point. Corneille says it's sort of the same, similar. Quote, a certain degree of admission of the finite and limited ways in which the ultimate truth has been grasped and expressed within one's own religious teaching, practices, and or institutional forms, unquote. So science and Christian dialogue belonging makes a similar acknowledgement that science and Christianity have aspects, both have aspects of truth, and that the search for meaning and truth is enhanced by putting the two together. Commitment. For Corneille, commitment means staying rooted in a particular religious community from which they speak. She's a theologian, and a theologian might venture to dialogue with another religion, gather some insights, learn about the community, but then they have to return back to their community and speak for the church. So they really can't be in both communities in that sense. So they might bring insights of science back to the Christian church, and they might bring religious insights to the scientific community. So an example of a religious insight into science might be the identification of the boundaries when science starts acting like a religion, or the moral implications of a certain line of research. And of course, science informs Christianity through issues of archaeology, cultural studies, physics, cosmology, etc. Interconnection. So interconnection, again, quoting Corneille, is the belief that the teaching and practices of the other religion are in some way related to or relevant to one's own religious tradition. And this is sort of the heart of dual belonging as well. The belief for science and religion are meaningfully related around important issues. But it's also important that meaningful relationship speak both ways. It's not a unidirectional transfer. Empathy. Again, I'll quote from her. It is only to the degree that one is able to resonate with the religious meaning of a particular teaching and practices of the other religion that they may have impact on one's own religious tradition, unquote. So one of the key themes here is impact. So for the person with a dual science and religion belonging, how you end up viewing Christianity or dialogue and put them in communication should have an impact on you. And that's okay. You have to be able to, willing to accept that. Without that attitude, it is really hard to see how one can claim to be dual belonging. You sort of end up developing a split personality. Mondays, Tuesdays, and Thursdays, I'm a Christian. On the other days, I'm a scientist kind of thing. So hospitality. The possibility for genuine dialogue still demands ultimately the recognition of the other religion as a potential source of genuine and distinctive truth. Dual belonging to science and Christianity requires an understanding that both Christianity and science address genuine and distinctive truth areas. This hospitality has to extend to areas of disagreement and tension, as well as those of similarity. So my favorite quote from Corneille, to make progress, to grow, is to immediately push the limits of religious hospitality towards still greater openness to truth and difference. Which is to say, to a truth that makes a difference. So both Nitter's and guidelines and Corneille's attitudes place the person with dual belonging in a unique position. Their humility, empathy, and hospitality can make those with dual belonging effective advocates for Christ in the scientific community and for a better understanding of science within the religious community. So, Haley and Sherwin, these are drawn largely from doing the Hindu-Christian dialogue, both in the course and with some Hindu friends I have. So, half the battle is asking good questions. Both science and Christianity need a stake in the question, okay, as well as the capabilities for addressing the question. If you find yourself wandering helplessly on big questions, consider the question you're asking. Maybe narrow. Two, dialogue requires a solid understanding of both science and Christianity. Do we know enough about the science or the theology of what we are considering? So a brief perusal of the science-religion dialogue on the web should convince you pretty quickly that often the knowledge of science or Christianity or both is highly limited. Being honest with ourselves about our knowledge of the subject can direct us to acquire a better understanding of what is missing. There's no guarantee that knowing well both the science and the Christianity is going to solve tensions, but it may prevent us from falling down needless pathways. We must be willing to embrace our ignorance, sort of the faith-seeking understanding. Remember to engage science and science as Christianity, and let them speak to one another. Too often we treat science as if it's a religion, and religion as if it's a science, and that gets us in trouble. True dialogue, even if it's internal, always presents the opportunity of being affected by the experience. Be open to this. If it doesn't affect you, why are you doing it? And finally, we need to recognize when we have lapsed into apologetics rather than dialogue. Trying to defend Christianity or science rather than putting them in conversation. If we have dual belonging, we do not need to internally do apologetics. And understanding that may help us do apologetics when we do the external argument. Okay. So, summarizing. Dual belonging isn't enculturation, syncretism, or the denial of any universal truth claims. Dual belonging requires epistemic humility for a pluralistic starting point, a commitment to Christianity and science, two practices, two communities. The search for interconnection with functional analogies, allowing for the exploration of similarities and differences, an identity that views both science and Christianity as whole, that results in a natural empathy toward hospitality towards both. We can guide our inner dialogue by asking good questions, being knowledgeable in both science and Christianity, keeping science as science and Christianity as Christianity, and be willing to be affected by the results. Be willing to replace apologetics with dialogue. Serving Jesus does not mean that we cannot be fully committed to both the gospel as expressed in the Christian church, as well as the scientific enterprise. At ASA, I hope I'm preaching to the choir. We can gain insights into what it means to have a science of Christian dual belonging if we listen to others that are engaging in other dual belongings. We can also use the principles of interreligious dialogue to help us with our internal dialogue, preventing us from going down fruitless pathways and hopelessly avoiding unnecessary internal struggle. Thank you. Questions? Ah, yes.
You mentioned being in dialogue with other people who are engaged in dual reality. What are some examples of that other than other people involved in religion and science? Do you have some insight there?
Sure.
Very different dualities that might be parallel?
So one, the question is examples for engaging in dialogue with other people with dual belonging. Let me give you a personal example. So one of my dialogue partners, not so much in publications, but in conversations and whatnot, is a young Hindu scholar who's interested in doing ecological concerns and social justice concerns within Hinduism. It's a real challenge. He has similar problems with the far right, people that literally are chasing down, sometimes murdering people that eat beef, and the caste system. And so even though we're have very different religious traditions, sometimes he can express things that happens in his world that shed light on stuff that happens in my world, and vice versa. I've had to learn a lot about his Hindu beliefs. Sometimes there's some interesting religious dialogue as well, like he has no problem with what he'll call fractional incarnation, that something could be 25% divine and 75%. So he says, I don't understand why Jesus can't be 50-50. But there's insights to be gained. So his dual belonging has characteristics similar to mine in dealing with environmental issues. So that's one practical application. In terms of the church, getting your pastor and preach to deal with science and religion in the church, in many churches, is problematic. So if you can find some other, even if, say, a Jewish or a Quaker or some other tradition within Christianity where this is more commonplace, may provide you some insights on how to make that happen, or at least how you deal with those issues. So, yeah. So I think that, to some extent, depends upon the issue. Even the concept of a boundary sort of says this part of my thought is Christian and this part of my thought is scientific. And there are things that are. I mean, I don't think science has a lot. So I go to an evangelistic Episcopal church, which may sound odd, but is nonetheless true. I would not think that science has much to say about the form of the liturgy, which is very important. So there are areas, but on most questions where there is some, so on the question of what exactly is going on in the Eucharist, you know, if I meet somebody that says, no, you know, that is actually the blood of Christ, I'm thinking to myself, okay, I could take that, put it under a microscope, but I'm pretty sure I'm not going to find any red blood cells. So it depends on the question, but I think that any question where there's a potential overlap, I think it's fair game for the sciences to bring the science to bear and the Christian to bring the Christianity to bear and put them in dialogue.
So I'm curious if you could elaborate on this idea of enculturation versus dual belonging, because it would seem like people, or at least the way that I've been taught, you know, your primary identity should be Christ. If you were dual belonging, then would you be, you know, science. One of those seems to have eternal significance.
Yeah, so the question is, can the question of enculturation into belonging. So I think science and Christianity is a far easier one to defend than Buddhism and Christianity. So I'll use an analogy. If somebody came up to me and said, you know, I declare Jesus Christ as my Lord and Savior, and that's my primary allegiance, so I'm not sure I can do allegiance to the Creator God. You'd say, I think you don't understand the Trinity particularly well. So I think one can declare allegiance to God the Creator and say, I'm also exploring creation. I mean, this is God's creation. It's not, there's God here and something else. So a scientist is exploring God's creation. Now, if there's tensions between what I see as shows up in the science and some biblical interpretation, then you need to do some soul searching and trying to figure out what's going on, or just live with the tension. But I don't think it's bad to say that it primarily has to be over there. It would be like studying an artist in school and saying, I'm going to study the artist, but I refuse to look at any of the paintings. Really? You think you can understand an artist and not understand their artwork? So I don't really think there's a contradiction there. Yeah.
My question is probably very similar to what she was getting at, but maybe even going broader view of this dual belonging than just the science of Christianity. But what if you belong to two communities, you dual belonging, and you come up against something and you cannot resolve a conflict? Does that kind of automatically force you into the enculturation mode, or do you live? Can you live with conflict between two communities as a dual belonger?
Yeah, you just may hold them in tension. Yeah, I mean that's and that is Cornel says you can't only have dual belonging because it's going to cost you the suffering and tension. But many people hold things in tension throughout much of their life, and you certainly can. And maybe you hope for some maturity or something to resolve it or whatnot. But we think of tension as bad, but out of that tension comes the creativity and the ability to move forward in a way that if you demand that everything be harmonized at all times, you're not going to have much in the way of creativity or moving forward or growth. That's why I like Cornell's. It is the differences, living with the differences, that make a difference. Yeah. So it's a great question. Time for one more. Yeah. I mean, how do we harmonize the two in 60 seconds? So I would say to this, if that's something that you're exploring, it's a really big subject, but you might want to start by listing out what the assumptions you're making on both sides. I'll go a little bit over this. So I do a lot of work in environmental. I do environmental theology. Genesis 1 through 11 is bread and butter. But to have that conflict means a certain way of viewing Genesis 1, a certain type of reading. It requires a certain interpretation of the science. And so to explore that difference is going to mean to exploring those two options. Okay? And we can talk. We have a plan that we can talk all the time if you'd like about that. Or you can go into Biologos or some of the others. But I will start by finding out what the assumptions you're making. Okay, I'll have time to take one more if there's one. Okay, go ahead.
You mentioned process theology.
Yes.
Ian Barber, in his book Science and Reason, was an advocate. And when I first heard that God was and he said that God has a consequent nature, yes. Namely that God is affected by what we do in the world and that we have an agreeing with God to save people. Remember to save Sodom and Gomorrah? Remember that dialogue? He bargained with God to get, you know, how many righteous people? To me, that's an example of God's consequent nature. Mm-hmm. That God was willing to enter into dialogue with and compromised. So, could you comment on your take on the process?
There are things that I like about process, and there are things that I don't like about process. I will say that when I had the course in process theology, I pointed out that it was very good at explaining the efficacy of prayer, and there was silence in the room. None of the process theologians wanted to take that one on. Like most theological forays into this, it has traits and it has weaknesses. My biggest concern with it is the, like I said, it strays from orthodoxy, and it certainly adopts things from science that there's no evidence for. And I'll leave it at that. Thank you very much.